Hello and welcome to the July 2015 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB, and I'm joined today by three members of staff, Javed Dasani, Denise Durant and Akemi Miura, to talk about some of the issues that were discussed in the IFRS Interpretations Committee meeting on 14 July. Now, the comments and views that you'll hear today will be those of the speakers, not necessarily those of the Interpretations Committee or the IASB. Our first issue to look at today relates to IAS 23 and borrowing costs. Now, Javed, what was the issue that we were submitted and what was it all about?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So, yeah, we did receive a request asking a particular question about borrowing costs. The submitter actually described a scenario where an entity had borrowed funds specifically to finance the construction of a qualifying asset. The construction of that asset has since been completed and the funds have not been repaid. There could be multiple reasons for not repaying the funds. And the entity has other qualifying assets as well, which are being funded out of the general borrowings of the entity. Now, generally, when an entity has assets that are being funded from the general borrowings, IAS 23 paragraph 14 requires an entity to calculate and apply a capitalization rate to the expenditures on those assets. It specifies that the capitalization rate should be the weighted average of the borrowing cost applicable to the borrowings of the entity that are outstanding during the period, other than any borrowing made specifically for the purpose of obtaining a qualifying asset. So the submitter notes that it's not clear that when they're doing the calculation of this capitalization rate for the other asset, it's not clear as to whether the borrowing that was initially made to fund a specific qualifying asset for which construction has now been completed, it's not clear whether that borrowing should be included in the calculation of the capitalization rate or whether that borrowing should be excluded.
Okay, so a company might have borrowed, say, 100 and used it to construct asset A. Asset A is now complete.
Correct.
During the period of constructing asset A, it correctly capitalized borrowing costs on that borrowing of 100. But now that it's completed the construction of asset A, it no longer capitalizes any borrowing costs in respect of asset A.
That's correct.
But it's still got the loan of 100 outstanding. The question is, does that now form part of general borrowings?
Correct.
For
exactly
funding other assets that are under construction, or is it excluded from those general borrowings?
Yeah, that's exactly the question.
Okay.
That the submitter was asking.
So what has the committee decided to do, or how did it analyze this issue?
Yeah, so the committee looked at the wording in paragraph 14 and they noted that the intent behind that seems to be to include all the borrowings of the entity other than those made specifically for the purpose of financing a specific qualifying asset. And when they read those wordings, I think a majority of the committee members agreed that the wordings seemed to imply that the specific borrowings should be included within the general borrowings pool in that case once the construction has been completed. But they did note that the wording is not as clear as it could be, and therefore, and they understand the reason why there have been diversity in practice from this lack of clarity in the wording, and therefore what they decided to do through their discussions was to basically recommend an annual improvement to the Accounting Standards Board to basically propose to clarify the wordings. At the last meeting in July, they also agreed that the amendment would meet the criteria for inclusion in the next annual improvement cycle. And they also agreed that the amendment should be applied on a prospective basis.
Okay. So this will now go to an ISB meeting for the ISB to consider and ask for their agreement with this before we put it into the an upcoming exposure draft for annual improvements.
Yes, that will be correct. So our next step is to actually take this issue to the ISB, to an ISB board meeting, and to discuss it and get the views of the board members.
Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
Our next item relates to the deliberation of comment letters received on a proposal for a narrow scope amendment relating to IFRS 2 share-based payment. Now, Denise, you brought some comment letter summary and analysis of the 70 comment letters that were received on this exposure draft. And this exposure draft related to three separate amendments, but that had been exposed together in the 1ED. Can you first of all just describe briefly each one of these three amendments?
Sure, Michael. Well, the First Amendment contained a proposal to clarify the accounting for the effects of vesting and non-vesting conditions on the measurement of cash-settled share-based payments. And this is because IFRS 2 does not contain any guidance in this respect. So the proposed amendment included in the exposure draft clarified that such accounting should follow the same measurement principles as applicable to equity-settled share-based payments. The second amendment contained a proposal to clarify the accounting for a very particular share-based payment transaction with net settlement features, whereby an entity has the obligation to withhold an amount for an employee's tax obligation associated with share-based payments, and then the entity transfers this amount normally in cash to the taxation authorities.
Now, that particular amendment, Denise, that was one where the existing requirements would be that the award, the share-based payment, would be bifurcated into an equity-settled portion and a cash-settled portion. But this amendment was proposing that an exemption be permitted in very limited circumstances so that the whole of the share-based payment could be accounted for as equity-settled.
That's right, Michael. And the reason why this proposed exception was suggested was to reduce operational complexity and to avoid undue burden in applying the requirements in IFRS 2.
Okay. And the third proposed amendment?
Yeah, well, there was a third amendment included in the exposure draft, and this contained a proposal to clarify the accounting for a modification to the terms and conditions of a share-based payment that changes the classification of the transaction from cash settled to equity settled. So under such a proposed amendment, the proposed accounting treatment is that you would recognize the liability upon the modification, and the equity share-based payment will be recognized for the accrued portion of each award by reference to the vesting period, and the difference between the original award and the replacement award would be recognized immediately in profit or loss.
So what was the overall message we received through the feedback to the exposure draft?
Yeah, well, overall, most respondents agreed with the proposed amendment, so there was a broad agreement. However, some respondents were of the view that the proposed amendments needed some additional clarifications, and they proposed some additional wording that they thought could be included.
Now, the Interpretations Committee agreed to recommend to the ISB that it finalises these three amendments, but subject to some further clarifications. Now, what were those further revisions that the Interpretations Committee was recommending?
Yeah, well, the Interpretations Committee proposed a number of revisions to the wording of the three proposed amendments, and also proposed adding some examples merely to the proposed amendment on the classification of share-based payment transactions with net settlement features, and also proposed adding another example on the modifications to the terms and conditions of a share-based payment that changes the classification from cash to equity settled. However, Michael, the principal revision that the Interpretations Committee suggested was regarding the proposed amendment on the classification of share-based payment transactions with net settlement features. And this is because the committee noted that the effect of the exception when measuring the difference between the cash actually paid and the charge recorded during the vesting period in profit or loss could be quite significant. So what the Interpretations Committee observed is that, well, this cash paid would be recorded until settlement, and because we are following equity settled accounting, then the difference between what was recorded in the vesting period and the cash paid will be recorded in equity and not in profit or loss. So the committee was really concerned about this account, well, this effect derived from the accounting. So it proposed the ISB that an entity should disclose information about the estimated amount of cash that the entity will need to pay in connection with the withholding of the employee's tax obligation on the share-based payment transaction. And we will bring this proposal to the ISB at the future meeting.
Okay, thank you. So the next steps then is to bring all of this to an ISB meeting and to ask the ISB if it agrees to finalise these three amendments.
Yeah, that's right. We will bring all the Interpretations Committee's recommendations to finalise the proposed amendments and the wording revisions that the Interpretations Committee has suggested. We'll bring them at the future ISB meeting, as you mentioned.
Thank you. Our third issue relates to IFRIC 14, which is an interpretation of IAS 19 on employee benefits, and is connected to a question about the continued contributions into a scheme beyond the period that has been agreed between the entity and the trustees, and whether those contributions should be assumed to continue beyond that minimum period, or if not, what should be done then. So, Akemi, can you tell us a bit about what the question was and the circumstances surrounding the question that we received?
Yes, thank you, Michael. As you explained, the Interpretation Committee received a request to clarify whether the future minimum funding requirement for contributions to cover future service would apply for only the fixed period that had been agreed between the entity and the pension trustees. The conclusion on this issue could affect how the economic benefit available as a reduction in future contributions is determined, which could in turn affect the amount of the net defined benefit liability or asset to be recognized in the entity's statement of financial position. In the circumstances described by the submitter, neither a plan wind-up nor a plan closure to future accrual has been decided upon at the end of the reporting period. In addition, a pension regulation or a contractual agreement or both specify the following points. First, the pension trustees are required to prepare and from time to time review and, if necessary, revise a statement of funding principles that documents the pension trustee's policy for ensuring that a required funding objective is met. Secondly, the statement of funding principles sets out, among other things, the methods to be used to determine the assumptions that were used to calculate the liabilities that determine contributions to be paid. Thirdly, the pension trustees are required to prepare a schedule of contributions that is consistent with the statement of funding principles. Fourthly, the amount specified in the schedule of contributions must then be paid for a fixed period. Fifthly, the entity and the pension trustees are required to renew the schedule of contributions as the fixed period comes to an end if the plan is continued. Sixthly, the schedule of contributions does not need to be renewed if the plan is wound up. And lastly, the entity can decide to wind up or close the plan to future accrual if this is agreed with the pension trustees.
Okay, so some quite specific circumstances related to this particular fact pattern. The key one, as we were saying earlier, is that there is an agreement about the contributions that are to be payable for a fixed period of time. What happens, or what should the company do in estimating contributions beyond that fixed period? So where did the committee get to when it first discussed this in March of this year?
Mm-hmm. The Interpretation Committee observed that paragraph 18 of IFRIC 14 requires an entity to analyze its minimum funding requirements at a given date into the contributions that are required to cover any existing shortfall for past service on the minimum funding basis and future service. It then noted that the question raised relates only to the minimum funding requirement for contributions to cover future service. The Interpretation Committee then noted that the level of the contributions will be subject to future negotiations, although the entity must continue to make contributions for future service under the funding principles if the plan continues after the minimum period. When the entity estimates the future minimum funding requirement contributions in the circumstances described, the Interpretation Committee concluded that the entity should assume a continuation of the existing funding principles for future service in accordance with paragraphs 21 and BC 30 of IFRIC 14. On the basis of this analysis, the Interpretation Committee determined that sufficient guidance exists and therefore tentatively decided not to add this issue to its agenda.
Okay, so in July we looked at the comment letters received on that tentative agenda decision, and what did the committee decide as a result of those comments?
Mm-hmm. Yes, on the basis of this analysis of the comment, the Interpretations Committee decided to finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda. It also decided to modify the wording of the agenda decision to describe the circumstances and the observations more precisely, taking account of typical regulations that are relevant to the circumstances described by the submitter. In particular, the final agenda decision would explain that the funding principles include the method to determine the assumptions to be used to calculate the liabilities that determine contributions to be paid. This change should be made because the funding principles do not necessarily determine the assumptions as fixed assumptions.
Okay, so perhaps to sum up, we could say that the funding principles themselves are that the entity should expect those to continue, the funding principles, mm-hmm. but when you apply those funding principles to the particular circumstances that the entity is in, then that might lead to different assumptions as far as contributions are concerned. So it doesn't mean that the contributions have to continue at the same level. It doesn't mean that they automatically stop. You have to, in fact, continue with the same overall principles and then make a judgment as to what the contributions would be in the circumstances of those continued principles.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of the IFRIC Update podcast for July 2015. The full details of the proceedings of the Interpretations Committee at the meeting can be found in the July 2015 edition of IFRIC Update, available on the ISB website. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.